Billy, Tim, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And this is Tim.
Well, guys, it's been 8 glorious years of the Funny Book Awards. And I got to say, it's this time every year that I'm usually regaling you with a story of how I lost it during the Christmas holidays. And I got to say, during my Christmas holiday experience this year, I didn't lose it once. At no point did I blow my stack at a retail establishment or at a restaurant or something like that. I behaved myself like a human being all through the Christmas holidays.
I need to change my holy shit moment of the year. Yeah.
Now, I will say it happened yesterday. I was a little late. I was at the liquor store and I'm standing in line to check out. And the guy behind me in line says to his buddy, "I am ready AF for the weekend." And I wheeled around on him and I said, no, we're not doing that. We are not saying AF in the world. We say as fuck. I went all off on him. I'm like, this is not a thing. Stop it. It dies right here.
Like random stranger guy?
Random stranger guy.
Oh, Aaron.
He looked at me like I was a crazy man.
Because you are.
Yeah.
Justified look. I do not want to hear ready AF or I'm hungry AF out in the world. AF stays on the internet. It does not come out into virtual space.
Fine.
I'm just saying. Fine.
But are you guys ready AF for the 8th Annual Funny Book Awards?
God damn it, Paul.
Paul, if you didn't do it, I was going to.
I swear to God, it's not a thing.
Before we get started with the Funny Book Awards, I wanted to call out, there was an article that came out on...
Well, it was wrong.
Yeah, it was. December 28th, 2017, from Vice. I don't know if you're familiar with Vice. It's a website. They've got a bunch of different channels that are kind of under that same umbrella. But Vice started their articles, "The 10 Best Comics of 2017. This hasn't been a very great year for comics. In fact, I wasn't even able to find 10 good comics for this top 10 list." And first of all, I find that harsh because I think there was a great year for comics.
I would agree.
I had no problem finding... Well, the problem I found was amongst choosing some of the great things that I enjoyed this year. So, Vice can suck it. This is your actual best of 2017 list coming up right here.
You know, I find when I look at these... Because I glance out at the best of lists just to see what people have given them to. And I think if it's a website, they're pretty much beholden to never give anything to Marvel or DC. Mm-hmm. The more obscure, the more likely it's going to get an award.
Well, and it's all clickbait.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't mean that some of that stuff isn't really good, because some of it I do like. But when you discount the major two just because they're the major two, it's all hippie bullshit.
I completely agree. It's again signs of the apocalypse. I've agreed with Wayne.
Oof.
Holy shit moment of the year for 2018.
So if you have not heard one of our annual Funny Book Awards shows before, you know, we don't do top 10 lists or anything like that. We go over different categories, from like shittiest to not shittiest, I guess. I don't even know, we have them in an order, but starting with favorite supporting character, ending with favorite ongoing series, and we all cast in our vote, and if there's a majority one, then that's the one that wins. If there's not, then we have a four-way, then we have a tie.
Yep. So, you know, we talk about adding a fifth person so that we can break the tie, but we don't know a fifth person.
We don't like anybody else. We barely like each other.
That's a fair statement.
Exactly. All right. So, well, shall we open up the envelope for the first category?
We should. Our first category is favorite supporting character. And so why doesn't Wayne start us off?
All right. This year, my favorite supporting character is Lois Lane. I have really enjoyed her interactions across multiple books. That recent Batman storyline with the double date was incredible. Lois as a mother to Jonathan, Lois as a wife, as a badass fighter. You know, she just has been kind of the standout character when it comes to supporting cast for me all year.
That's a good one. That's a good one. You know, I'm going to go ahead and go next because mine's similar but different. My favorite supporting character, I put Jonathan Kent. And I know people will argue with me because it's like, well, he's not a supporting character. He has his own book. And yes, he does. But I'm speaking specifically to the books in which he is a supporting character. Books like Superman and Action Comics and things like that. Seen a lot of great moments from Jonathan Kent this year. Very reminiscent of the days in which Damian Wayne was in the Batman and Robin book from Pat Gleason and Pete Tomasi. Same creative team for the most part, working on Jonathan Kent. And so I've truly enjoyed seeing Superman as a father. I think Jonathan Kent makes Superman a more interesting character. And I think that's the role of a supporting character. So I went with Jonathan Kent.
I absolutely agree with you, Paul, about Jonathan Kent and why he's such a good supporting character. And for those very same reasons, I've selected Catwoman as my favorite supporting character over in the Batman book. And for the same reason that Wayne chose Lois Lane, I think we see more of the other side of Batman through this character. We more of Batman is revealed than what we had previously seen. And I agree, Jonathan and Lois do the same thing for Superman. But Catwoman is my choice. I have really enjoyed her as a character herself, as told by Tom King in the pages of Batman. And I've really enjoyed the stories that she has been in throughout the year. When you look at the journey that those characters have been through over the last 12 months, that really moved me. So Catwoman is my choice.
Tim? You know, for all the reasons that Paul said, I wrote down Jonathan Kent as well.
Bam!
Because we've seen a little bit of the Lois Lane, Clark Kent support throughout the years, but Jonathan Kent is kind of newer, and I feel like this year I've seen Superman grow a little bit more with his interaction with his son.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that choice because he was I debated on picking him, and the only reason I didn't was because he has his own book with Damian. But you're right. I mean, he is a supporting character in other books, so I'm pretty happy with that.
All right, so we have our first winner of the 2017. How do we categorize this year?
It's the 2018 Funny Books awarding 2017 comics.
There we go. What Aaron just said. Our first award goes to Jonathan Kent. All right. So our second category is favorite villain. Aaron, why don't you go ahead and start us off with our favorite villain?
I will tell you that I was very tempted to call out Jonathan Kent as my favorite villain, because in the current story, which started in 2017, predicts that Jonathan will destroy Metropolis. And I'm sorry, that's a villain in my book.
He did fry a cat as well.
That's right. He murdered a cat, Paul.
But it was a cat. If it were a dog, it's a cat.
Yeah, it's a cat. I mean, you know, hell. It's Cat. But actually, my favorite villain this year is his grandpa, Jor-El.
All right.
You know, I struggled some with the Oz effect in which evil Jor-El appears or mind altered Jor-El, because we see that Jor-El is perhaps not fully in control of his faculties. But I enjoyed that story. I think if you were to listen to all 8 years of the funnies, I think you would find that we struggle with this category every year. You know, that I remember Jonathan saying in our very first Funny Book Awards that there just aren't a whole lot of really strong villains, you know, that it's heroes fighting heroes most of the time, that sort of thing. I've struggled with, you know, who was my standout villain this year. It certainly wasn't Lex Luthor, right? Darkseid has really sort of been off the field for a while. I had a hard time picking a villain, and you know, it certainly wasn't the Riddler or the Joker from the Year of Jokes and Riddles. So I struggled with it, but I did enjoy the Oz effect overall. So Jor-El is my choice.
I actually seconded that vote. I wrote down Mr. Oz, though, so there might be a technicality. But you know, the reason I did was that no other villain had as lasting an impact after he's gone, had been gone off the screen, as Mr. Oz. He really had Superman questioning himself. He destroyed some of his fortress because he was so torn up about what he'd done to what he perceived to be his father. And he even stole Flash's, treadmill thing to go back in time to see if he could prove that that was his father, which I don't know what that does, because if he's right, then he really did kill his dad. And if he's wrong, well, then he shouldn't feel so bad. But the lasting impact of that storyline of his supposed father showing him how no matter what happens, it's not going to matter to the humanity. That was a lasting impact, and it struck a chord in me as well. It was one of the questions I always ask about Superman. So
yeah.
Favorite villain, yep. Mr. Oz.
Yep. So I will third that, because Whoa. That's also who I picked. And it even goes back to before the reveal. I liked the character as a mysterious pulling people out of time. I enjoyed it with in Detective, and then once you get the big reveal, it just changes everything. And for all the reasons Tim said, it's a lasting effect. I mean, it definitely. Maybe it's also a case of there really wasn't much competition, but he was easily best villain for me.
Well, and I think that's an accurate statement, is that there wasn't much competition. This is one of the, you know, there were a couple of categories that I struggled with. This was one of them. And I think it's, you know, we've had villains, but have we had any memorable villains? Have we had any villains that had a great impact that weren't also heroes like Lex Luthor? I debated Orion in the Mr. Miracle book. I debated things like that.
The problem with Orion, because I thought about that as well, Paul, the problem with Orion in the Mr. Miracle book is you don't get enough of him.
Exactly. Right?
You know, you certainly get, you know, he's certainly applying the pressure to Mr. Miracle and Big Barda, but he's not on page enough for you to go, yeah, oh, man, he's a terrible villain, you know,
yeah.
And you don't get to see enough of what he's thinking. And I think there are story reasons for that. But, you know, in terms of being a great villain, I need to see more of your motivation. And we got to see that with Jor-El. We also got to see Jor-El, as Wayne said, his sort of far-reaching grasp, in lurking behind the scenes for so long. I mean, he truly had an impact on the DC universe.
And, you know, Jor-El was going to win, and he did. I mean, clearly, we have 3 out of 4, so Jor-El has won the award right. already. But my vote was actually for Darth Vader. In the pages of the Charles Soule Darth Vader book, we are seeing, you mentioned things about motivation. You are seeing Vader's motivations. You are seeing inside the head of Vader. You are also seeing how ruthless he is and how strong his powers are. And I am enjoying every issue of that book with fantastic art, fantastic story. I'd say it's as strong, if not stronger, than some of the stuff that Kieran Gillen did with Darth Vader, and certainly better than anything on screen.
I would, you know, when I was going to say that, I would say that you see a better characterization and certainly a much more diabolical sort of mind in On the Pages, by written by Charles Sewell and by Kieran Gillen in those two Darth Vader books. I would absolutely agree with you along those lines, that a much better representation than what we've ever seen on screen of Darth Vader.
So now we have two winners. So Jor-El takes the favorite, or Jor-El slash Mr. X, or Mr. Oz. Takes the favorite villain award. Woo.
Woo.
Going into our third category, obviously, with every villain, there must be a hero. So we should discuss our favorite hero.
One would hope, anyway, that there'd be a hero. I mean, I suppose you can have a villain and just everybody else is just victims, right?
Fair.
Not nearly as entertaining or optimistic.
I feel like we are going to have a winner here, but we'll see. There could be a dark horse in the mix. Tim, why don't you go ahead and start us off with this one?
So one of the reoccurring themes as I finished my list this year was that I stayed very centric to DC. The few books that I get are DC books lately, and something I'm going to have to try to remedy this coming year, hopefully. But for this year, it wasn't very difficult for me to pick, and for me, this is a return pick. I picked Superman this year as well. You know, the reason I did was that I saw a lot more humanity in Superman, and this was last year as well, than I remember reading in his books since probably the Dan Jurgens run when he wrote The Death of Superman. In that book, it was more about the humanity of the people around him and the impact it had. But I gotta say, since the last couple of years, Superman's been a lot more three-dimensional to me anyways. He might have always been to other people, but to me, it's the writing's been consistently something that's shown me a different side of somebody who's been around a long time, and that takes a special talent. So for me this year, favorite hero is Superman.
Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I mirror Tim's vote for Superman as well, and that's why I figured there would be a winner here, because it was a damn good year for Superman, and seeing him as a father, seeing him as a husband, I agree with everything Tim said, and I've always enjoyed the human aspects of Superman, but we have never, in my opinion, seen them as portrayed this year now as a father and as a husband. So I have truly enjoyed the Superman books this year. So I give it to Superman.
Superman is my choice as well. And I'll say, you know, we did one of our What If episodes several years back. And, you know, one of the things that I had said is I would love to see a Superman and Son comic, right? And that was back before Convergence and all of that. And, you know, one of the things that I had suggested is, you know, it should be Superman and Son. Perhaps it's, you know, in the days after Lois Lane has passed away or something. But seeing this family unit is fantastic. And I truly feel like the only miss, and I think it's significant to say this, when you think that you're getting a Superman book four times a month. Because Action and Superman are biweekly.
Not including Super Sons and some of those other books.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a ton of story that you're getting around these characters. The only one that when I was looking back across the books that came out in 2017, the only books that I was really unhappy with were the Independence Day stories. You know, where it was the after school special about American history. That was just so terrible. And not that I object to, hey, let's talk about what makes America great. But it was the heavy-handed propaganda sort of feel to it. But everything else I loved about Superman in 2017. I think it's a terrific book. I think he's a terrific hero. And this is – we so sorely missed this personification of Superman when we had the new 52 Superman. It's really easy to just forget the, 5 years we spent with new 52 Superman.
So I didn't think this would happen, but we actually have a unanimous one here, because Superman's who I went with as well. for all of the reasons all of you have said.
So we have a clear winner, like not even a majority. We have, you know, wholeheartedly agree that Superman was our favorite hero for 2017. All right. That doesn't happen often.
It does not. For our next category, we have favorite TV show based on a comic book. And I got to say, it is far and away a clear winner for me anyway. And it's Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics. I enjoyed every single episode this season of his documentary series, from his take on Milestone and Image, Stan and Jack. I just completely adored this series and am eager and hopeful that we get a season two.
Yeah, I had to start the conversation about a week ago when we were preparing our topics to find out if that was going to be an option. Because how we usually do it, I think, is we've focused on shows like Gotham and those that are, you know, storyline driven. Right. But this year, the standout for me was Kirkman's Secret History of Comics because it was just so good. I learned things out of it. I saw, you know, for the most part, what I feel to be even-handed treatment of the topics. I think they did a very good job across almost every episode of being completely unbiased in their presentation. And that was impressive to me.
No, absolutely. I felt like not only was it interesting around comic books that, you know, I have experienced in my lifetime, but they also functioned as quality documentarians. And I loved it. I'll own these on Blu-ray because I'm hoping there's a bunch of additional features.
All right. So whoever had 20 minutes into the funnies for Tim being annoyed, they get the prize. I'm not a documentary fan. Apparently there's some in the room, for Christ's sakes. I really wanted to vote for Riverdale in this category. It was really close. It was really close. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing that fires me up on Christmas like angst. And Frank Castle, the Punisher angst, was totally on my TV. And I loved every minute of it. So that's my vote, Punisher. John Bernthal is the motherfucking Punisher, and it was glorious. There had to be a moment in just every episode. I was like, oh, crap, that was violent as hell, and I love it. So the voice of the people is going to vote for the Punisher.
Well, you know, I have not seen the Punisher. And we had, a couple years back, we had to separate TV show and movie because there's that many TV shows and movies now. That they are genuinely two separate categories. But we had, you know, amongst the TV shows this year, we had Defenders, we had Iron Fist, we had Punisher, we had Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Riverdale, Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, Gotham.
Legends of Tomorrow.
That thing. I don't watch a lot of them because, quite frankly, a lot of them are shit. I had forgotten about Riverdale. Riverdale is a close second, but, and this is going to piss Tim off.
How can it be a close second if you forgot about it, Paul?
Well, because I forgot it was based on a comic book. It's one of those, like, you just forget in the moment. But I give it to Secret History of Comics. I think no other representation of our media, of our beloved media on television, is as mature as that is. For every reason that Comic Book Men is a piece of shit, Secret History of Comics is a wonderful show. I think it is interesting. It is new. I don't want to say new reader friendly, but it is, you know, it's something that anyone can watch whether you're into comics or not. I find that there's a lot of human interest there as well.
I would absolutely agree. I think they do a marvelous job of just making it interesting beyond talking to a bunch of fanboys like us.
Yeah.
The Milestone episode, I think, was just so well put together. You don't have to be a comics fan to have enjoyed it.
Yeah. And what I've consistently seen across multiple episodes are some of these people that have such big egos are actually admitting fault. They had it during Milestone episode, and they had it during the Image one. Yeah. And these are things I have never heard these people admit before. that to me, that they actually got them to admit fault for some of this stuff, just Todd blows my mind.
Todd McFarlane on camera admitting, yeah, I probably screwed that up. was amazing to me because, I mean, you know, Todd McFarlane
admitting
is not that,
that guy. Yeah, admitting that their books were poorly written.
Uh-huh.
I never thought I would hear him say that.
So we have a winner, four winners in a row now. Secret History of Comic Books is our winner. Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics is our winner for favorite TV show based on a comic book.
Crazy town.
Lots of good stuff coming next year, too. You know, we've got new seasons of Jessica Jones and I think Daredevil,
Yeah, Daredevil's coming.
Daredevil. And Black Lightning starts this coming month.
God, I can't wait for Black Lightning.
So it should be a good year next year.
Yeah.
Now, this next category, I was flush with options. Favorite movie based on a comic book. There were so many movies this year, obviously.
Were you flushed with options because you had so many favorite movies or because there was just a lot of movies?
Both, right? There were great movies, there were good movies, and there were some bad ones in there. But we had options, even Dark Horse options that I had forgotten were this year. Things like Lego Batman movie. But we also had Wonder Woman, Thor Ragnarok, Justice League, Spider-Man Homecoming. I feel like there's a
bunch. Guardians of the Galaxy
Volume 2. But my winner for 2017.
I swear to God, if somebody says Lego Batman, there's going to be a problem.
My winner for 2017 favorite comic book movie, and it was tight. I actually have three written down here, and I figured I'd make a game time decision. One of them was Wonder Woman, one of them was Thor Ragnarok, but the one I went with was Logan. I give Logan, my award, my vote for favorite movie based on a comic book in 2017, which, I loved Wonder Woman. I loved Wonder Woman, and the fact that Justice League isn't on this list makes me sad, but it just wasn't comparable to these other three. Logan was, you know, for all, it took me, we talked about this on the show, it took me a couple minutes to get into it and get the fact that we were watching an R-rated X-Men movie. But I loved the way that story was handled, directed, acted. Hugh Jackman, his best performance as Logan. So I gave it to Logan.
So, Paul, for me, Wonder Woman wasn't even in the running. I enjoyed it, but it didn't stand up to any of the Marvel movies for me this year. When I kind of looked at my final three, a couple of them were the ones that you were mentioning. Logan was one of my runners up because I just didn't like the ending. I did not like how Logan dies. I thought that really pulled away from the movie for me. Spider-Man Homecoming had some drawbacks as well. Thor Ragnarok was my very close second because I loved it. And I honestly thought until I realized that my actual winner came out last year, I thought it was going to be Thor Ragnarok. But Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was my winner once I realized it came out in 2017. I just rewatched it recently. I loved it just as much when I rewatched it as I did originally. I didn't start picking things apart like I did with Wonder Woman when I rewatched it. And just the feel of the movie. It's a fun movie it just gets me excited every time I watch it. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 for me.
I just want to say that Lego Batman would have been an admirable choice because if somebody had mentioned Thor Ragnarok in this fucking conversation, I'd unfriend people.
Tim, it was definitely my runner-up. Well, I was going to say it until I found out Guardians of the Galaxy came out
because
fucking love that movie. It was incredible.
Guardians of the Galaxy was a good movie. I give it all the props. But Paul is right on the money. Logan was for me, it wasn't that hard this year. Logan, it told us a superhero story we hadn't seen, which was the twilight, the sundowning of a superhero. And it was really good. The ending for me didn't bother me all that much. It seemed fairly appropriate to me. So for a lot of those reasons, I also thought Patrick Stewart in the film was also good. I picked Logan.
it really does pain me that you dislike Thor so much, because I really loved that movie. I thought it was incredible.
I don't dislike Thor. I dislike whatever that was.
I had four movies that I was tossing around as to which one I felt like was my favorite of the year. And let me tell you that of those four, Thor Ragnarok was not one of them, because it is a terrible, terrible film. Despite being beautiful to look at, and I cannot say enough that I think it is a gorgeous film, but it is depleted of character and heart. It has none of the wonderful things that I love so much about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Why do I think we're going to be arguing about this for years to come?
We probably will, because as strongly as you feel about the quality of that film, I feel like it is a really bad movie. So Thor Ragnarok wasn't on my list. I will tell you that Guardians was, but was rather lower on my list. But I will say that I very much enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I just don't think that it was at the top echelon of films this year. Spider-Man Homecoming was thoroughly enjoyed by me. I dug just about everything in that movie, and I think that it demonstrates that Marvel should be handling Marvel characters. But it also was not my primary choice of the year. The Lego Batman movie did make my list, strictly for the reason that it surprised the hell out of me as to how much I enjoyed it.
The Lego movies are incredible.
I was stunned at how much I enjoyed that film. My runner up to my movie of the year was Wonder Woman. And if you ask me on another day, it would probably be my primary choice. I think the Wonder Woman movie succeeded at doing something that no other film has done before. I think that we've got to fully see that Gal Gadot can carry a film. You know, she saved Batman versus Superman, in my opinion, because hers were the only scenes that worked in that movie. Sorry, Paul. And, you know, she continued to light up the screen in Justice League. I think she is a superstar. Now, I don't know if that carries over into other roles for her, but Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman is perfect casting, and they should make as many of those Wonder Woman movies as they can. And while she's willing to play the part, because holy crap, she is amazing on screen. But yeah, I will say Logan is my choice for favorite movie for all the reasons that you guys said. It continues to build a bigger box that we can put our superhero movies in. It doesn't have to be fighting the big hole in the sky. They can be these human dramas. And that's going to come back later in some of our other discussions about comics. But, you know, I think those movies that really, you know, expand our thinking about what superhero movies can be, like last year's Deadpool, are the films that really command my attention. And so, yeah, Logan for me and for this podcast is the favorite superhero movie of 2017.
Wow. All right. I like it.
Very strong.
Yeah, I've pretty much been on the I lost on the favorite villain one, but in general, I've been pretty good. So our next category is often divided,
maligned.
You know, it's difficult on Tim. It's a little easier on the rest of us because we could just scroll back through our Comixology purchases for the year. But Tim, I know you buy the physical copies, and I know it's a little tricky, but so I'm going to go ahead and let you start us off with your favorite comic book cover of 2017.
You know, and I picked this one not so much because of the, well, I'll just say it. It's Batman 37, and Batman 37 is the double date cover with Superman, Lois Lane on one side and Batman, Selina Kyle on the other. It's not anything visually that, you know, you wouldn't see 100 times in a comic book store, but it was a symbology of something that was important, which was the bonding of all these characters together. So Batman 37 for that reason.
All right. That's a good choice. Mine is also Batman related. I went with Batman number 21. which was the Jason Fabok cover for The Button, the first part of The Button. Now, there was a lenticular cover that, like, if you faced it one side, it was Batman holding the Watchman button. If you put it the other side, it was Flash holding the Watchman button. I went with the one that was kind of just a combination of the two, split down the middle. Either way, I loved the simplicity of it, but also just what that cover meant in regards to the DC Rebirth storyline. And that storyline in general. So I went with The Button, or Batman number 21, by Jason Fabok.
So when I go back through mine, I start looking for, were there any covers that I picked up this book strictly because of the cover? That I wasn't planning on buying it, but the cover was so good that it motivated me to actually pick up the book. And there weren't a lot of those this year. But the one that stood out for me was Mr. Miracle number one. The cover with him in all of the, like, I don't know, they're not chains, but all of the restraints, calling back to, like, the escape artist aspect. Just a simple cover with the spotlight and all of that. It made me curious about the book. And I picked up the book strictly because I thought the cover looked really fascinating.
So this is a question for Wayne and Paul, since they are my fellow digital comic shoppers. Do you find that covers seem to matter less to you now that you're shopping digitally?
Yes.
That, yeah, I mean, because I guess in the app, the covers don't take up as much space in your, you know, in your view as they do when you're in the comic shop.
Yeah, I can tell you, Aaron, for me, when I'm looking at it on a computer, mm-hmm. the covers are more likely to catch me than if I'm looking at it on my tablet. Phone. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I would agree with that.
Sometimes I buy them on the Comixology webpage from a computer and then sync them to my device. But mm-hmm. And the covers are more likely to catch me that way because they're bigger.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do find, while they're not important, I do find that I still will give a book that a different try based on the cover. But titles are important, especially on Comixology.
Yeah. The cover will pull me in to hit the preview button to see the first couple pages.
Exactly. But that cover for Mr. Miracle number one is by Nick Darrington. And yes, that is an awesome cover, Wayne. I didn't realize you were reading that book. Or maybe you read the first issue, hated it, and haven't picked up since.
I read the first issue. I think I read the first couple issues, but I did stop after that.
So my cover of the year is Superman number 33 by Brian Sook. It has the Superman family on Apocalypse as well as Lex Luthor. There's just tons of energy on the cover. I wouldn't say it is as quite as iconic as, say, Paul's choice of The Button, but it looks like, you know, it looks like a comic that if I was walking up to a spin rack, you know, 30 years ago, I'd grab that thing up.
Yeah, it's a glory. I mean, I think it's a great cover. Yeah. It almost looks like a movie poster.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great cover. And if you want to see these covers, check out iomgeek.com. I will put them all in the show notes for this episode.
So once again, no clear winner as to cover of the year.
I don't know that we've ever had a clear winner for favorite cover.
I don't think we have either.
I mean, had we been doing this in 1987, I'm sure it would have been The Dark Knight Returns number one.
Right. But now, let me say one thing about the covers before we go. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've ever discussed this as a rule for covers, but I exclude variants from my choice.
Generally, I do too.
Yeah, simply for the fact that, you know, if it was a good cover, you would have made it the cover. Right. But if we were including variants, Olivier Coppel, one of his Batman covers would have won for me this year.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been enjoying the hell out of the Olivier Coppel Batman covers. But I just wanted to put that on record that, man. Olivia Copia. I don't know why they're not putting that on the regular covers, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't have a variant cover artist of the year award, but if we did, it would go to Olivia Copia.
Absolutely.
So, our next category, the holy shit moment of the year. The moment that made us cry out, holy shit. You know, it's I will say I struggled this year because there haven't been a ton of holy shit moments. You know, I thought, well, there were some surprising moments. There were some great moments, like Tim mentioned, the Batman number 37 double date, which was one of my things. But then I was like, but that's not a holy shit moment. Well, and since I'm talking, I guess I'll go ahead and ghost first. I went with Detective Comics number 955 featuring Cassandra Cain versus the League of Shadows, or the League of League of Shadows. You know, where Cassandra Cain, you know, I don't remember the name of the Bat team. Oh, the Gotham Knights. Where the Gotham Knights are being held captive by Talia and the League of Shadows, and Cassandra Cain. Now, is it Talia or was it Lady Shiva? I don't know. Regardless,
it was Lady Shiva.
Yeah, Lady Shiva.
Lady Shiva.
But Cassandra Cain confronts the League of Shadows on her own and kicks some ass.
All of the ass present was kicked.
Yeah. So that was my holy shit moment for 2017.
That's a good moment, Paul, but it's not the one that got me. It's not the one that made me question and feel like I was getting screwed around. It's not the one that I got some payoff for already, but it was future Tim Drake's comment to present Tim Drake and said, "Hey, you need to make up with Connor. You know how important he is to you." And it was the first mention of Connor post New 52. And, you know, one of the things that pisses me off is it was spoiled for us, right? You know, it was in the news before I had an opportunity to read the comic. And then the fact that they paid it off relatively soon after, that it wasn't just a, "Hey, we're going to dick with you a little bit." I got to tell you, I didn't believe that we would get to see Connor, and we've not yet gotten to see him in his full Connor-ness. But we've had glimpses of him, and he was on a couple of pages of the current. I forget the name of the story arc, but the current Super story Sons of about
Tomorrow.
Yeah, Super Sons of Tomorrow. So I'm digging it. And that was my holy shit moment of the year.
All right. That was a good one. That's a very good one. Wayne?
So I want to give an honorable mention to my runner up because it's not a comic book story, but Disney buying Fox Films.
That's a
good one.
That almost got it for me, just strictly because of how big it was. But I wanted to stick with a comic book, actually something that happened on the pages. And I will say I didn't actually say holy shit because it was spoiled. But it's the same as Aaron's. After all this time with no mention of him and no indication that they were ever going to acknowledge him, suddenly Connor Kent. And that was thrown out there, that changed the end of that whole storyline.
Yeah.
It's like, I thought that story was over. And then that comment is made and suddenly we go into a completely new storyline of, you know, them having to stop Tim Drake. That really would have been I would have said, holy shit, if it hadn't been spoiled. So that was my moment.
Yeah.
I'm amending this category.
Oh dear.
Because what I said was not holy shit. I said, oh shit. There was one moment this year where I threw my comic book across the room. We'll take you a little journey back in Action Comics where we started talking about this Clark Kent. Who was he? Who could he be that has all this information? And we were very, very excited to find out who he was. I was on that journey. I was hooked along in. I'm like, I'm in. I want to know. It's important. They've been dragging it out. It must be really big. And it was Mr. Mixoplex. And when I was
so excited by that.
When I got to that reveal, I went, oh, shit. And I threw that comic book as far as I could. God, I hated that book. That was my oh, shit moment this year.
I love that some of the things that Tim hated were the things that I love the most out of the course of the year, like the Thor Ragnarok and Mr. Mixoplex being the Clark Kent.
Yeah, it's great. So
so we actually have a winner for Holy Shit Moment of the Year, which is future Tim Drake referencing Connor Kent in the pages of Detective Comics. So pretty cool. So now we're starting to get into some of our bigger categories. Well, yeah. So some of our bigger categories, starting with our favorite limited series or original graphic novel. Now, I think it's fair to say, I don't think I read a single freaking graphic novel this year. You know, we didn't, to my reference, or to my recollection, I should say, I don't recall there being an Earth One release. For a while, Marvel was putting out these original graphic novels. I think the original graphic novel stuff, at least for 2017, was primarily for the independent publishers like Image and some of those other ones.
Did you see that Gary Frank and Jeff Johns are working on another Earth One Batman book?
I did not see that.
And it's going to come out after the conclusion of Doomsday. So probably not 2018, probably more like 2019.
Yeah. I don't know that I'll care. But I mean, seriously, that's like 3 years after the last one. You got to keep some momentum if you want to have an ongoing story.
Agreed.
So, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and start us off with your favorite limited series or original graphic novel?
I will tell you that my favorite limited series for 2018, hands down, is Tom King's Mr. Miracle. I deeply love this book. It is raw, so emotionally raw, and the story is so beautifully told. The artwork is so pitch perfect on this book. I have no negative comment at all to say about Mr. Miracle. It is a challenging book to read. It is an emotional book to read. I will tell you that it is not the book that I go running to when I buy it. You know, it's not like, ooh, it's the first one on my read pile. In fact, it's always the last one on my read pile, simply for the fact that it requires more space. You know, it's not, you know, you read it and 15 minutes later, you're on to the next book. It's you read it and you got to live with it for a little bit. The book has challenged me. It has challenged me visually. It's like, I know they're telling me something here. What are they telling me? You know, there's a lot of layering in the artwork in that book, as well as the story challenges you. And it is not, this is a story that's not for everyone. And again, it's a superhero story that's expanding the box. You know, it's telling a different kind of superhero story with these New Gods characters. The last panel of the last page of the most recent book, where Barda has murdered everybody in the room other than Mr. Miracle, is heartbreaking and energizing and exciting all at the same time. This book makes me feel, and I love this book.
Well, I'm going to go in and second your vote, Aaron, because mine, it was somewhere between Batman White Knight and Mr. Miracle, but I will say, as much as I've enjoyed White Knight and the story that is portrayed there, no book challenges me like Mr. Miracle. Mr. Miracle is a book that challenges me without offending me, which, you know, like Alan, you know, like an Alan Moore story. I find Alan Moore stories challenging, but also offensive and hard to get through. Mr. Miracle is emotionally challenging and thought-provoking and beautiful art. I love everything about that book. So Mr. Miracle gets it for me as well.
So there were a couple books I thought about for this one, and I have a rule after some of the previous years of I won't pick a book that is a limited series that isn't done yet. Mm-hmm. Because I don't remember what year it was, but one year I picked something and then the ending was so horrible I ended up hating the whole series afterwards. So some of the things that I was looking at, like the Nightwing New World Order, you know, I think is Batman White Knight, that's still going, right?
It is.
Yes.
Okay. I knew I hadn't read the last issue of it, but you know, for me, I hadn't seen the ending. So it was the same thing. I thought about those, but they didn't end yet. And so I didn't give them really in the running. So mine was Star Trek Mirror Broken. Mm. I've always loved the alternate reality, you know, mirror universe in Star Trek. And seeing that with the next gen characters, seeing how they were different. The art was very, it's not the usual art that I like. It's much more stylized, but I thought the style worked for that story very well. and it just all came together for me. So that was my vote.
Can I argue with you a little bit about that?
Sure.
I love that. I love that series all the way up until the end. The thing that bugged the hell out of me about that series, and I think they did a beautiful job with the Barkley character and with the Data character. It falls down is with Riker and Picard. And keep in mind, these are mirror universe characters that we're talking about. Where it fell down is the absence of competency. And that's the heart and soul of Star Trek, is that it's the characters are wildly competent. And these characters were not. Riker's a good pilot, but, you know, both Riker and Picard both seem to just sort of bumble their way through the big heist to get to capture the Enterprise. That bugged me. And then it really bugged me is it felt like we were on a journey to tell a bigger story. And then the series just ended. Yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? And, you know, it ends with maybe there'll be more.
When it ended, but I found like at the end, Picard was very competent, you know, as he's calling the move, doing the Picard maneuver and all of that. I thought that was it kind of redeemed the character of he was a little bumbling in the beginning, but he did pull off a major heist. And then once he had the ship, I found him to be very competent. I'll give you Riker was never felt competent to me, but yeah.
That was the reason why it didn't make my – because I considered it because, you know, it was a limited series. But that's why it didn't factor into mine is I didn't feel like it nailed all of the characters, and I felt like it didn't stick the landing.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. If I think either the Nightwing New World Order or New Order, whatever it was called, or the Batman White Knight would have finished, mm-hmm. I probably would have gone with either of them over it.
Sure.
But – with neither of those being finished, that was mine.
Very good, Tim.
Well, this is the point in the program where I just throw out my vote to somebody else because I didn't read any of these that anybody else is talking about. And since Paul backed me up with Logan, I'm backing up Paul with Mr. Miracle.
Woohoo!
There you go.
All right, Mr. Miracle, favorite limited series of 2017, which leads me into a favorite writer. Favorite comic writer for 2017, because it should come as no surprise based on our conversations on the podcast that it was either going to be James Tynion IV or Tom King. And for me, Tom King took the prize for Mr. Miracle, for his work on Batman, for being a writer that, even though I didn't necessarily care for his start on the Batman book, has turned it around wonderfully. I haven't read The Vision, but I know he also wrote Vision for Marvel Comics, and I know you guys love that. So Tom King is my favorite comic writer for 2017.
And so, I will tell you, Paul, that he is my selection as well. I recently finished The Vision. I picked up the last – there's two trades in that series at Marvel, and I picked up the second trade during the big end-of-year sale and read it. And it's a beautiful story, not eligible for this year because it was a 2016 book, but it's a beautiful story and a gut-wrenching, heartbreaking story, much as Mr. Miracle is. I have absolutely loved Tom King's work on Mr. Miracle. I have absolutely loved his work on Batman. I love what he's doing with Catwoman and Batman and expanding that family that we're seeing, you know, Batman from a different angle than we've seen before. And I will say that I think that's what Tom King excels at. He excels at finding the space that we haven't examined in these characters' lives. I think that's the mark of a great writer. He surprises me, Paul, and he challenges me. Tom King is my selection.
That is exactly why I picked him as well, which might be surprising because I haven't been reading all of the Batmans. Mm-hmm. But those last few issues really showed me what I've seen in him in other books.
Yeah.
You know, because I loved Vision. Vision was such a different type of book. And when I read those last couple issues of Batman, I get the same thing. Not the same feel or story, but it's a different kind of story. Yeah. And even back to that Mr. Miracle number one, very different type of story. He just kind of elevates your reading. So surprisingly, considering I'm not reading his main titles, I went with Tom King as well.
Timmy?
Well, you know, it might have been the first funny books I was on when I did something very similar to this, and everybody looked at me like my head was sewn on the carpet. But I voted for Jolly Blackburn and Knights of the Dinner Table this year. For those that don't know, we don't talk about this book because it's not the kind of comic book that you would normally talk about. But this little book started off as a little three-panel issue in Shadis and Dragon magazine of people sitting around gaming. And this year they celebrated their 250th issue. And the writing that he's done on this latest arc, which just to let everybody in on, it's basically a Willy Wonka trip through the Hard Eight Factory, which is basically like going to WotC in the real world. It's been incredible fun, and his writing on this latest arc has been some of his best work. And Tom King was my runner-up, but I had a feeling I had a feeling I needed to pay homage to somebody who'd gotten to 250 issues. And honestly, it's my Island book. If I only could get one comic book, that's the one I'm getting. So, Jolly Blackburn, Knights of the Dinner Table.
All right. Well, you know, like you said, dark horse there, but Tom King is our winner for favorite writer for 2017, and that brings us to our favorite artist for 2017.
That's a hard category.
It is.
This year was very tough for me.
Yeah, it's a hard category.
There was a ton of great art this year.
Yep.
You know, and some of it was on the covers, like Olivier Coppel and all the covers we just mentioned. A ton of great stuff interior-wise. But why doesn't Wayne start us off in this category?
All right, so the person I went with had both covers and interiors. Not nearly as many covers as he did interiors, but I really enjoy the style of Clay Mann, the current artist for Batman.
Oh, you mean Clayface?
No.
Clayman.
Clayman.
His last name is Mann, M-A-N-N. His first name is Clay.
Thank you.
Wow. No, that was genuine confusion, Wayne. I could tell. He wasn't just fucking with you.
I thought he was just fucking with me.
No,
I really like his art style. He's you know, been around a couple books. He's done some covers, done some interiors. I know he's not a household name, but it just resonates.
Tim?
You know, this year, I like I said, I had a tough time. Ultimately, it came down to the person I chose was Jorge Jimenez for his work on Super Sons.
Good choice.
His work had an energy to it that matched the story that they were trying to portray. I agree. There was a lot of good artwork in the books that I read, but the one that stuck out to me was the one that matched the tone almost exactly, and that was Mr. Jimenez and his work on Super Sons.
I gotta say, for me, you know, I was looking through my selections through the year and the books that I've enjoyed, but I come back to what I've said before about, you know, Tom King on writing, is that the artwork that I feel moved me the most this year was artwork that challenged me, and that was the artwork by Mitch Gerrard, on Mr. Miracle. I find, number one, there's so much of it, you know, because he does these nine panel pages, a la Alan Moore's Watchmen and Dave Gibbons' Watchmen. I find that I'm unpacking those panels one by one by one, because there's so much going on. There's so much going on in the face of the character. There's so much going on in the background, you know, and they're telling the story visually, truly, you know, that there is this partnership between the writer and the artist, where I think where the artist is ever bit as much of a writer in these circumstances as the writer himself. So Mitch Gerrard from Mr. Miracle. Paul,
you know, I almost chose him, but there was one artist that I talked about multiple times this year, and just how truly fantastic I thought his art was. And, you know, I'm going to start by talking about James Tynion IV. and Detective Comics, because I think Detective Comics is a book that could very easily be hard to read digitally. James Tynion IV loves him some two-page spreads. and I mean, like, legit, almost every page is a two-page spread, and he just loves that storytelling style, and, you know, which is great if you're reading your comics, you know, physically, but on digitally, and if I don't do the guided view necessarily, you tend to lose a lot, or, you know, things are just small. However, there was an artist that he has been paired with on Detective Comics, one of the rotating crew of artists, that just did some of the most breathtaking work this year for me, especially in the storyline involving Zatanna. And that artist was Alvaro Martinez. That guy, he is like DC's answer to Stuart Immonen, for me. I think every page that he did, the characters, the emotion, he did tech great. He did people great. He did fight sequences. He did quiet sequences. He is perfectly paired with James Tynion IV. His two-page spreads are fantastic. I am looking forward to seeing the future of that artist, one that I was not familiar with before this year, but hopefully DC puts him... He's already on a Batman book, but, you know, maybe one day we'll get him on a big crossover event book. So Alvaro Martinez was my vote.
So no clear winner in this category.
No clear winner on favorite artist. But we've got some great art, which is good, right? Means we had so much great art this year. We couldn't single it down to one artist.
And I would absolutely second that there's just a tremendous amount of terrific artwork out there.
Well, let's go to the category that I struggled with the most.
No struggle with this at all.
Really? I struggled.
Same here.
It was clear to me. In my experience, I don't think I certainly don't think Paul will agree with me on this. But in my experience, my favorite event or crossover is a true crossover and a true event. And it started and ended in 2017. And it is Crisis on Earth X from the CW. I thought they did a marvelous job running that event. I can't get over the fact that I enjoyed an episode of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. It did something that I didn't think that they would be able to do. It got me back into the Flash. And a little bit into Arrow. I mean, I have been away from the CW shows for more than a year, and it got me back in. I thought this crossover was fantastic.
One thing I thought it did really well is, unlike the previous crossovers, it seemed like you were watching an episode of the regular show that was taking part during the crossover. This didn't feel like that.
It blurred the lines. Yeah,
it blurred the lines so much that it was more consistent, more...
It was... You were watching a four-hour movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was not, you know, where you're going to get an hour of this episode and an hour of that episode. It was a four-hour movie, because you're right. In fact, I would say that the characters, you know, you're watching an episode of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Those characters weren't primary in that episode necessarily. Same thing with Flash and Arrow. It was truly an ensemble production, and the story went where the story went, regardless of which show they were on. Yeah, I loved it. I was a huge fan. I binged all 4 hours of that thing. So Wayne.
So I binged all 4 hours too, and I really thought about picking that because it definitely met the crossover aspect, and it was an event. But I went with something that is both an event, but it also kind of became an imprint, and that was DC's Rebirth. That so much of what they've done this year with DC has brought it back to what I loved. Mm-hmm. And even though it's not a consistent, solid story like we were just talking about with the crossover, it just is a whole feel to the universe. The event is bringing back the good stuff. And I really appreciated that in this year. DC rebuilt itself to me.
All right. Tim, how about you?
Oh, man. You know, I think I'm going to go off the rails a little bit on this one. Mostly inspired by Aaron's choice, because I thought we were talking about actual comic books. You know, the crossover didn't start this year, but it did end this year, so I'll give it that. But Spider-Man Homecoming and Tony Stark in the Spider-Man universe was thoroughly enjoyable. It was just enough to make it better without being, to me, being too much to overpower the fact that it was a Spider-Man story.
I think it's actually Spider-Man in the Iron Man universe, but I'm not going to argue with you.
Okay. So that's my vote was Civil War / Spider-Man Homecoming.
You know, and so here's why I struggled with this category, and it's because, quite frankly, the events this year sucked in comics, like in comics wise, I should say. Anything that I considered an event, like DC Metal started strong, but has really waned for me. Secret Empire for me just never really took off. I tried
because it was crap.
Yeah, you know, things like that. I enjoyed Marvel Legacy, but that's more of a direction.
It's more of an imprint.
Yeah,
it's an imprint. Yeah,
than it is like an event. You know, there was a Marvel Legacy number one, which was a great comic, but even then, like, it wasn't like DC Rebirth. And DC, you know, I thought about DC Rebirth because that is truly something that affects all the DC titles. Most of them have some type of reference or inference. But then, you know, thinking about it, that's what a comic book universe is, right? A Doomsday Clock is the event for me. And I mean, in my thinking, Doomsday Clock is the event, but DC Rebirth is just kind of like, it started out as an event, but now it's just a shared universe, which is what comics mm-hmm. should be. But hearing this conversation, I hadn't considered venturing outside of the immediate medium. So I will actually give it to Crisis on Earth-X as well.
Did you watch all of it?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Okay.
I did eventually watch.